Mike Pence comes home for a tax reform push. Susan Brooks picks sides in the Senate race. That, plus a Klutz campaign kickoff and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending September 22nd, 2017.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, Vice President Mike Pence returned to Indiana to make a push for the upcoming federal tax reform effort.
Pence's visit comes in part as the White House puts pressure on Democratic Senator Joe Donnelly over tax reform. Donnelly joined Pence and Anderson, along with Governor Eric Holcomb and Representative Susan Brooks, as well as Congressman Todd Rokita and Luke Messer, both Donnelly challengers. Messer was not originally set to appear, but did join Pence after the White House sent out word that Rokita would be part of the event. Donnelly says his focus in tax reform will be to use it as a way to help stop outsourcing while luring jobs back from overseas.
What should we make of Joe Donnelly's presence at an event designed in part to pressure Joe Donnelly? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Phil Johnson, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. Mike O'Brien, does Donnelly's presence undercut the White House's push here?
Our president's a pretty classy guy, and so when you come into a state, you invite the sitting U.S. senator to attend your public event. So I think that's as much as you want to read behind it. I think the politics of this, it's an effort on Joe Donnelly's part to rewrite history. So his new frame for tax reform is we have to stop outsourcing jobs, offshoring jobs. We need to create incentives in the tax code to employ people here. Where he just had to divest himself. He came under public pressure to divest himself from his family company because he was criticizing outsourcing while owning a company, or in part, that outsourced jobs. So I think he's trying to have it both ways. He's going to the event, and then he's trying to wiggle out of this problem he's got for himself.
Is this a smart move on Joe Donnelly's part to stand next to Mike Pence when they're trying to pressure Joe Donnelly?
Absolutely. And Hoosiers know Joe Donnelly. They know Joe has worked across the aisle in a bipartisan fashion to get things done. And Joe has a simple rule. If something's going to benefit Hoosiers, then Joe's going to be for it. And if it's bad for Indiana, Joe's proven that he's willing to stand up to the Trump administration. So the fact that Joe is there, he is ready to listen, he is willing to work with anyone, including Republicans, on tax reform, I think this just speaks to who Joe Donnelly really is.
Smart move by Joe Donnelly?
Yes.
What do you make of Todd Young's lack of a presence there? I mean, you have Susan Brooks, Todd Rokita, Luke Messer, and no Todd Young.
It is a big hole in the picture, if you will. I don't know what the excuse for that may be, but his absence is obviously noted, and it makes you wonder because everyone else was already there. This is going to be the big push, and if you want to be on the bus, then you need to be part of that. And he's been supportive in the past, so that's what's another thing that's kind of interesting about that. So his absence is noticeable.
Although everyone else, as soon as I say this, I should probably do the mental check. Everyone else who was there is up for re-election or up for election in 2018.
That's true.
He is not, having just been one-third of the way basically now into his Senate term.
That's a good
so
point.
I guess the one interpretation might be that, why take a stand unnecessarily now when you can wait for things to unfold and have the advantage of time and perspective?
With Pence coming this week, Donald Trump apparently coming next week, do you think Joe Donnelly is feeling the pressure over tax reform?
Sure. The Cook Political Report, this used to be a leaning Democratic, now it's a toss-up. In the Beltway in Washington, this is a race that's being closely watched, and so that, ratchets up the pressure. And clearly the issue that is going to be getting tremendous amount of attention in the coming weeks and months is tax reform. So it just stands to reason that you would be cognizant of that issue and you you know, it will be an issue.
I mean, Joe's the second most bipartisan member in Congress. He's used to working with members of both parties, so I don't know about pressure. This is just who he is. He's willing, if it's a good idea, he's willing to work with folks.
Well, speaking of people who were on the stage with Mike Pence today, U.S. Representative Susan Brooks this week announced she's endorsing Luke Messer in the Senate GOP primary race over fellow Representative Todd Rokita.
In her endorsement, Brooks calls Messer a proven conservative while praising him as a leader who can build necessary relationships, a shot, some say, at fellow Republican Todd Rokita. Brooks will serve as honorary chairwoman of so-called Women for Luke, a campaign group of women supporters. Brooks also calls Messer a go-to leader in the U.S. House. Meanwhile, Rokita has built his campaign around the slogan Defeat the Elite and has criticized Messer's leadership role.
Phil Johnson, are you surprised to see one of Indiana's congressional delegation take sides in a primary fight between two fellow members?
In the country's nastiest primary, does anything really surprise us anymore?
It's spirited.
That's right.
That's
beautiful.
Spirited.
Rambunctious.
Rambunctious, you might say.
That is certainly one way to put it. You'll remember when Congressman Rokita announced his bid for the Senate. I did so on the State House steps, and he also called out the governor and legislative leaders for their tax hike. And now we see Congresswoman Brooks choosing sides. This thing is ugly. There have been some insults exchanged. There have been ethics complaints filed. So I think the thing that would have me sweating if I was in Mike's seat here was there are 8 more months of this to go. We've got a long way to go on this primary.
If you're in Brandon's seat, you're super excited about
it. Yeah, that's right.
That is accurate. I can fact check. True. Party leaders may say that a good primary is healthy for the party, but privately they've got to be a little concerned about the tone this race is taking. Does Susan Brooks's entrance into it unnecessarily quell those concerns or ratchet them up?
I'm not sure it's her entrance is unnecessary or inappropriate. I mean, certainly campaigns are exercises in collecting as many endorsements as you can from people, and it's not unusual for sitting members of Congress or incumbent governors or incumbent legislators to say who they're going to be for. There's incumbent members of the Indiana General Assembly who are going to who are picking sides or will pick sides in this. So, look, I think both of these camps are just lining up. They're lining up as much support as they can. A lot of us, these members of Congress, this delegation we have right now, they've known each other for a long time. So there's some friendships that come into play here, too. I won't be surprised if we see more people pick sides. And then, you know, in mid-May, we're going to pull together and elect one of these people to be our U.S. Senator.
Well, that would be to hopefully be our U.S.
Right.
Senator.
I think. That's
it's happening. No, it's happening.
Do you think Susan Brooks's endorsement will make much of a ripple in this race?
I could barely hear your question over the sound of Ronald Reagan turning over in his grave, you know, speaking ill of Republicans or taking sides unnecessarily. What was your question again? I couldn't.
Will it make an impact?
Maybe at the margins. And again, this race, when you have two incumbent members of the House who it's going at each other, I suppose. Normally, I wouldn't put much stock in endorsements, although certainly that's the name of the game at this point. It can help with fundraising if you show that, look at all these people. But it might have a little more because of how, you know, you have two titans to a certain extent. There are other people in that race, too, we should point out, you know, that,
absolutely,
that they're not sitting members of Congress, but still legitimate candidates in their own right. But it might have a little bit more play than usual because two members of Congress seeking endorsements from their colleagues on the Hill.
The campaign came out a couple weeks, last month, I believe, and backed Todd Rokita, too.
Or at least the people who chaired the Trump campaign.
The people who chaired the Trump campaign. Yeah, that's accurate.
Are you a little surprised to see Susan Brooks get into this?
Yeah.
Particularly so early, I suppose, in the process?
Yeah, I think it is interesting. You know, John makes a very good point about it. But I think, you know, the situation here is you have two incumbent members of Congress who are going against each other, so you have that friction. And now you have a third member of Congress, so fully one-third of the state's delegation engaged in this directly. I mean, I know it's just an endorsement, but you said, I prefer this candidate to this candidate. And these are all people who are all on the same side. So I think it's a very interesting situation. I am surprised that she injected herself at this point. I can understand Mike's point about, you know, picking up, choosing sides and you know, going for somebody, but I would think that would be something you might want to, if you were a member of Congress, who's on the same side of the aisle with these folks, you might wait until later in the process to do. Because, you know, what happens if Representative Messer decides that he wants to be out of, he wants to drop out of the race, and, or Representative Rakita, or neither one of them wins? I just think,
well, I think
the implications.
I think in that scenario, if you get in earlier, instead of it like the intersection of, if this is a really, really tight race going down the stretch, this is just generally politically, this isn't being a partisan comment, the right strategy is to come in early if you're trying to minimize your risk, but you're trying to be loyal to the person you've got this relationship with.
I guess that makes sense from a political perspective.
I suppose.
Just a little surprised.
I'm sure Todd Rakita won't be one to hold a grudge. Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, will Susan Brooks' endorsement of Luke Messer have an impact in the Senate GOP primary race? A, yes, a big impact. B, yes, a small impact. Or C, no, it won't have an impact. Last week's question, will the Indianapolis area win the bid to get Amazon's new headquarters? 45% of people say yes, 40% say no, and 15% say everybody in the area signing up for Amazon Prime might help. If you would like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, Indiana State Auditor Tara Klutz launched her re-election campaign this week.
This will be the first time Klutz runs a statewide campaign. She was appointed a state auditor in January after her predecessor, Suzanne Crouch, became lieutenant governor. The former Allen County auditor says her focus in office is and will be streamlining government processes to improve efficiency. Klutz is one of three state office holders up for election next year. Secretary of State Connie Lawson and Treasurer Kelly Mitchell are also up for re-election.
John Schwanis, is it a bad sign that Democrats don't have candidates for any of these offices yet?
You know, it's not a good sign. If you have a well-developed bench, you can, even if people have not formally declared their intentions, at least there's speculation about, you know, who's jockeying for position and
they're going around
and who might, yeah, you know, who's kind of make calling potential funders, who is going to the chicken dinner circuit, and you don't see that. At least I haven't seen or heard it. So that to me suggests, and we'll go back to the sports metaphor here, the bench is not very deep. In fact, I'm not sure there'll be enough players to field the starting lineup, so to speak, come the time.
Democrats haven't fared well in these state-elected offices of late for a few election cycles now. Is there an element to which you don't want to be the up for the slaughter kind of thing?
Sacrificial lamb.
Yeah.
You know, to carry a sports metaphor, but not the bench, you know, you miss every shot you don't take. The Democrats have to have candidates. I'm sure it's a tough sell because they haven't won, and it's a long shot based on baseline votes. But it's not like Democrats haven't won these in the past when the circumstances have been very similar. So it's a matter of recruiting the candidates. It's a matter of funding them well. And it's a matter of running good campaigns and then catching some breaks along the way, having a good top of the ticket, having a bad top of the ticket for the Republicans, whatever the case may be. But the answer to your question is that's what they have to overcome, this perception that they're, you know, just filling out the lineup sheet, if you will, and that they are actually competitive. And that's really hard to do, but, I mean, that's the point of the party.
At this point, I suppose that's part of the issue is just getting candidates is one thing, and so far we haven't seen or heard a lot of whispers about that. But the bigger problem is, are they going to get candidates who might make an impact next November?
So, absolutely. I'm confident that there will have candidates up and down the ticket that will perform strongly. And I think, to continue the sports analogy, actually, at the local level, we've got some real all-stars in the Democratic Party. Mayors in South Bend, in Kokomo, in Hammond, across the state, New Albany. There's some really exciting folks there, and I think those are great people to point to when we're talking about Democrats on the rise. So still plenty of time left in the campaign season here. Yes, it's important to build that campaign structure, but I'm not concerned about it at all.
Phil just mentioned a few rising all-stars in the Democratic bench.
Rising star Tom McDermott.
Well, a lot
America's
of them,
mayor.
Yeah, all of them are mayors that he mentioned, at least the ones that he mentioned. Is it a tough sell on either party, quite frankly, but especially in one that's been on a losing streak? Is it a tough sell to say, leave that office that you are safe in and come run for something that would be a tough go?
It's definitely hard to convince somebody who's actually in an office to go run for Secretary of State. I mean, all major party candidates have to have a candidate for Secretary of State. I mean, that's right. Part of your ballot threshold. But we see it happens every 2 years or 4 years. I mean, there's maybe one, I can't think of one in the last 10 years, maybe Joe Pearson in like 2006, who was like just like an exceptional like candidate who wanted to go and run for that office. The rest of them are kind of like game time decisions at the convention. It's like, you get in a room and go, all right, who's running for treasurer? You know, but whereas you look at our lineup, and these are people that, you know, you have Connie Lawson, who's qualified on elections issues, great fit for that office. Tara Klutz, Allen County auditor, great woman. Everyone's getting to know her. Brand new to the office, obviously, since Suzanne Crouch moved up to lieutenant governor. So these are people that are really good fits from a qualification standpoint for these offices. And you contrast that with people where you're like, how do we fill the pipeline with people who will just perpetually run for office because we need them to? Those are two very different pitches to voters in 2018.
You know, this is something of a historical aberration, too. Everybody thinks, oh, it's natural for whoever controls the governor's office, for instance, whichever party, to occupy all of the state house, statewide elected positions. And really, if you look back, Hoosiers have tended to engage in a lot of scratch voting, and whether it was dominance at times by Democrats when you had a Democrat in the governor's office, well, more often than not, there was always one or two Republicans, and the reverse was always true. So this, I guess the point being that you never know if Hoosiers return to the form that they had pursued for decades in the past, there might be one member of another party popping up in there.
To go running for statewide office.
That gets you off the bench, doesn't it? Yeah.
Well, a national group encouraging more women to run for office is launching an Indiana-based initiative out of Bloomington.
Rise to Run is a national organization that developed after the Women's March on Washington in January. Its organizers aim to encourage and train young women to run for office. Bloomington is one of four pilot hubs for the organization. Organizers say they chose Bloomington because it's, in their words, a progressive city that already has a strong foundation to support more women in office. Rise to Run also has pilot hubs located in Durham, North Carolina, Madison, Wisconsin, and San Francisco, California. The group is among several created in the wake of last year's election, all aimed at getting more young people to run.
John Katzenberger, encouraging more young people, especially women, to run for office is great. I think everybody would agree with that. But without a bunch of money behind them, are efforts like this really going to matter?
Well, they matter in principle, but money's king in politics, and so your point is well taken. I hope they're able to raise some money to back the effort and to make it meaningful. You know, there have been groups like Emily's Lists and things like that that have become popular and are very effective at having a positive impact on campaigns. But you got to have some cash behind the effort and build the momentum off of that.
Do you think this groups like this can make a difference here in Indiana?
You hope so. I mean, you got to try. I mean, look, we should put a disclaimer on this whole installment of this week's show because if you're in a civics class in high school, don't watch this because we just heard you don't want to run for office if you're going to lose. Why try to boost candidate recruitment? It's all money. I mean, I'm kind of down right now, but. It is often grassroots. I mean, all kidding aside, it is grassroots organizations and movements that traditionally have turned into a bigger force. And whether this will be one of those, or whether, you know, it'll be an asterisk in the in somebody's, you know, collection of political oddities in Indiana, I don't know.
A lot of these groups, like the ones I mentioned, Rise to Run, certainly Run for Something, ones like that, whether explicitly or implicitly, want young Democrats, or at least people who will align themselves with the Democratic Party, to run. Does that blunt their effectiveness to ignore the other major party?
Well, I mean, their goal is to go find Democrat candidates for office, and that's the objective of this organization. And, you know, to be fair, I hope Democrats find all their candidates in Bloomington. Just run them all, statewide, for every office. But the money aside, it is really hard to sustain that kind of effort. We saw the protest movements that kind of came out of January this year against President Trump that have largely kind of dissipated a little bit. They're still obviously, but it's not as organized. It's really hard to just sustain the kind of organizational discipline you need. Like the Tea Party couldn't sustain itself past 2012, really, right? I mean, it was kind of a flash in the pan in 2010. They when Republicans lost in 2012, I mean, we just stopped kind of seeing those groups exist. And it's just a lot of time, it's a lot of effort, it's a lot of money.
Yeah.
And, well, I mean, it's... Looking around, I don't see him.
Right. I mean, we'll put your name.
Well, I was just calling. That's yeah. about to change.
We'll put your address and phone number at the end of the show.
Do you think? I mean,
on Twitter.
This is a worthy cause to get young people and especially women to run for office, because in terms of the balance there, it's not balanced. People in both parties will tell you that for the most part. But do you think this sort of group can have an impact in a state like Indiana, where it's about getting young Democratic women to run?
So I'll be the optimist here and say that I think this is a great thing that we're getting folks engaged at the local level. And to John's point, money is important in politics, but at the local level, you're not pouring six digits into races. This is about who you know in the community, what the work you're willing to put into it. So in that sense, I think it's great that we're engaging people at that level. In terms of the one great thing about the Trump administration is that it has gotten folks engaged. And we see today that the latest iteration of the Republican Party's health care bill failed. And a lot of that is people are putting pressure on their members of Congress. So to say that, I think bottom line here, I think ultimately getting people engaged in civics is a good thing. And if that's what this group is doing, then I think this is good.
It's worth mentioning Republicans have been recruiting women through the Lugar series. They've created a pipeline for women to run for office, which is one of the reasons we elected, you know, 5 out of 7 of our statewide elected officials right now are women.
And I think the General Assembly, 19% of members are women, so there's still a lot of work to go.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, we need more.
The Republican Governors Association, which is, of course, a partisan organization, is running an online publication that's designed to look like a news media outlet.
The RGA's Free Telegraph posts partisan stories under the guise of traditional media pieces, with little indication they're produced by the GOP-aligned organization. That includes glowing mentions of Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb. The Governor's Association told the Associated Press the site is routine political communication, but for some in Indiana, it's evoked memories of the ill-fated Just In site Mike Pence attempted to establish as governor. Critics of Just In and the RGA site call them propaganda that pushes boundaries.
Well, Phil Johnson, in the new world of fake news, what should we think of the Free Telegraph?
You know, I haven't read the last dispatch of Just In, so I'm not sure how I should feel about this. But for the folks that were bemoaning fake news, the fact that they're in the business of manufacturing it now, that's just sad.
These organizations. First of all, Justin, can we say that was way overblown? And it was because the media already didn't like Mike Pence, and so they just blew that way out of proportion. That was a minor story about promoting things that were happening inside of state government that wound up making it look like he was trying to shut down, you know, create a state news-run organization, shut everybody else out. It was ridiculous. So thank you for letting me set the record straight on that piece. On this, all these organizations are putting out their own messaging, their own talking points. They're reporting on the members of this organization, which right now are 34 Republican governors in the country, more than we've ever had. So,
but do you see,
I think
I mean,
as a journalist, you're offended.
As a
human citizen, you should not be.
I agree that everybody does communications, but one that is explicitly designed to look like a news site, and nowhere, I mean, you have to get all the way to the very bottom
of the page.
These are
blogs. I mean, we've had blogs now for a decade that have been doing this. We have all these news sites. We have traditional news, news services that should continue to thrive, but we have these other organizations that do promote a certain agenda. And this isn't a new thing.
Well, not just, I mean, if you have insomnia sometimes and watch the infomercials that purport to be, newscasts, they're selling this product and that, which is sort of ironic because we hear so much news media bashing going on, like discount the fake, you know, the lamestream media. But apparently, I guess, imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. They must still something about the media if they want to imitate it or appear to masquerade as it.
Is this really just another form of the political communication that's been going on for a long time?
Well, it's certainly a new form or an adaptive form of communications, and I'm going to take issue with Mike's characterization of, you know, the media hate apparently for Just In and for Governor Pence. I don't think it was that. I think that the administration's handling of once it was learned that this was the case, and their defensiveness about that fed a lot of the distrust of what was behind the motivation of that. So, you know, we'll see however that shakes out in the long term. But to this point, John's imitation is a sincerest art of a form of flattery is true, and it's the credibility, and that's why the media should be worried about this and should make sure that they combat this continually.
Well, finally, Money Magazine this week named Fishers, Indiana, the number one city in the country to live. Mike O'Brien is our resident cheerleader for Avon and Hendricks County. Any shots you'd like to take at your neighbors to the northeast?
No, it's great. We're happy for Fishers. Avon ranked 17th in the country. There were a few more Indiana cities on that list, so it's great for the whole state.
I know a lot of people talk about the impact of IKEA, but is it really the Portillo's that's coming to Fishers? Very soon?
For a Chicagoland guy, yes.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Phil Johnson, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.